Never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm gonna get him!
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live every weeknight. That's Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Folks, right here on the on our flagship network, that's the Global Star Radio Network. You can hear us live, also by archive. We are also simulcast on BTR, Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live and by archive, of course, on our YouTube channel. See, we're right there. I can see us. So I know we are. And links to each audio and video broadcasting venue can be found on our home base at HagmanandHagman.com. HagmanandHagman.com. Don't forget, folks, we do also have HagmanReport.com. That's really show prep. That's our news information analysis site. And, of course, proof of life will be delivered to HomelandSecurityUS.com. That's HomelandSecurityUS.com. I'm going to be I'm going to be reactivating that and going to become much more active on that. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and of course my son Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman and the Hagman Report. We dig in deep into topics that the mass media doesn't. Got a full plate for you to cover tonight. It is just going to be, as the program unfolds, it is just going to be Joe and I. We are going to be digging deep into this news heavy just this being set up. Folks, we're all being gamed. And before I turn it over to you, I just want to kind of recap a couple of things. We're being set up, just so everyone knows, in case you haven't figured it out yet, we are being set up like at no other time in history. We're being set up for civil war. We're being set up for revolution. We're being set up in a number of different ways. But politically, most assuredly politically. I had written about this a couple of years ago. My intelligence insider, my source within DHS, said that this was the goal and objective. Was he off by some time? Of course. You know, you don't, it's difficult to predict, events, when the timing of the events, but nonetheless, this is exactly going off exactly as he predicted in terms of inciting the people of the United States, the citizens of the United States to riot. And they're going to use racial division. They're going to use, income diversity. They're going to use the Muslim and, other than Mexicans and Mexicans into this country as a force to cause further division. And, you know, the Black Lives Matter, they're going to be using organizations such as Black Lives Matter, the red organizations, Joe, you know, the communist organizations that are being financed by the Ford Foundation, Carnegie, Soros, Open Society Institute, and such. They're going to be using those, yeah.
They're using all these different psychological operations and psychological agenda-setting techniques, from using tactics from the mainstream media agenda-setting perception, public knowledge, and swaying and shaping of public opinion.
Yep.
Doing this by media and the social media agenda, the way things are covered. They have, these just different branches in the psychological operations and the information warfare. It's mind-boggling to know the depth of decisiveness these people are willing to go to.
Well, divisiveness, you mean, not decisiveness. They've decided, now they're going to divide. Yeah.
And the risk mitigation factors that they have in place, the Hegelian dialect, problem, reaction, solution.
Yep.
All these are being put to work right before our eyes, and it's going to get ugly.
Just on average here, what I'm seeing here, it looks as if they have decided that they are going to basically push some buttons, make some decisions, and actually bring us to the precipice, and we'll do the rest. You know, it's a lot easier, folks. It's much easier to get to create an environment and to make it sound, for example, create a situation and cause a reaction.
Yeah.
Okay.
The media has tremendous power in setting and shaping political discourse and public opinion.
But.
And this is their first line against the public.
Exactly. And you create the environment that makes it appear that it was all our idea. In other words, they're not going to go out and kind of punch us in the face and to prompt a response. Not that overtly. They're going to convince us that we've been hit in the face, and then we are going to respond or react. I shouldn't say respond, but react to that particular situation. And by doing so, they are then going to create that solution, which will be, emergency police powers, anything and everything that will advance the agenda of global dominance or global governance and subjugation. That's what we're headed for. And I listened to, before the show gets started, I listened to a number of radio talk show hosts over the weekend, and early today, and throughout the day. And it's just interesting at the shallow nature of how many are addressing this. Others are doing a good job, but some are just very shallow in terms of the depth in which they're addressing this. They're not thinking big enough. And tonight's program, if nothing else, we want you to think a little bit bigger. Go to the source. A couple of things before we really get into the throes of the program. I want to thank everyone who ordered my book, Stained by Blood, off of the website Stained by Blood, where they asked for a signed copy. All of those have gone out, but with that comes an interesting story. They went out twice. Well, actually, they didn't go out twice. They went out of the office twice, came back in twice, and then went out a third time. Are you mic'd up? You mic'd up? Oh, okay. No, that's all right. That's all right. We don't need the sound. Okay. All right. Yeah. So thank you for that. I still have a portion of a box left of the shipment of the first edition. So, if anyone would like a signed copy, certainly just go to stainedbyblood.com and you'll see it on the right-hand side where it asks for, who would you like it personalized to? And then you just click buy now, and $20 includes shipping. So I think I've got, I'm not sure the number, but not many. It's in the double digits, low double digits, maybe 20, 25, 30, something like that left. But, all of those of you who have ordered books through Sunday night, they've all gone out. But I took, on Friday, I took what do you call those carriers? Postal carriers.
Yeah, they're,
USPS postal carriers.
They're boxes that people use to carry,
they have a name, just carriers, just boxes, I guess. filled with envelopes. That we have a little machine here that, you know, a little label maker that makes stamps, and you know, the free version of stamps. And it just, well, I mean, you know what I mean. So I printed off postage, and I was really careful. And this is one thing I'd really like to do. Presentation is important to me. And this is why I'm mentioning this. I want everyone really to share in my frustration, because this is kind of funny too. But presentation is important to me. So I really spent a lot of time making sure that, you know, I went through, I looked at every book to make sure it was okay. And I, you know, wrote a few things in the book, and, you know, addressed it to everyone, and I did the labels. I did the, you know, all of the labels and stuff, and put the stamp on, put the postage on. I weighed them. They're all weighed the same, but so I go through this whole process last week or Friday, I think, and I took a box down Friday to the post office, and then today I was taking two of those crates or things. So my wife drops me off, and I go in with two postal carriers full of books that are going out. I walk in, and there's this line to the, there's one person, there's one guy working behind the counter, and there's this line that kind of extends right to the doors. And I just, you know, I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, well, I mean, I had everything all stamped up, but I had a question, because did you know, folks, that the postage went down?
No, I did
not. This weekend? Yeah, it went down on some items, like 2 cents. So when I had restarted my label maker that makes the labels and stamps, I couldn't find the same weight. Things were different. So it made me curious. So I waited in line with these two big postal carrier things, and finally I get to the, it was like 10, 15 minutes, and the guy ahead of me, and I don't know, do you remember what I told you he said, Eric? Remember? He wanted, and you do the voice just like he said. He wanted to know about the different types of, I don't get this. Eric captured this voice, and I don't get this, how people could, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but, you know, what kind of stamps do you have? Do you have, like, flowers? Do you have,
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm waiting behind this.
What kind of stamps do you have?
That's exactly, I'm not making this up, and this is not to disparage anyone. That's exactly how he said it in a loud voice. And it just cracked me up. But anyway, so it's finally my turn. I get up to the counter, and I put these two big containers on the counter, and I said, okay, I just want to make sure I'm not doing anything wrong here. And he looked at the return address, and he said, hey, what's in here? I thought, man, why? He said, I said, well, why do you need to know that? He said, well, I got a box for you. And he proceeds to go in the back room and brings out the box I took Friday. Never mailed, never sent out. And he puts it on the counter, and he said, look, you mismarked, you've got the wrong postage on here. So I flagged all of these for you, and I didn't put them through. I brought them back, and it's a pretty big post office. And anyway, he said, so you're going to have to pay 76 more cents on each one of these. I said, okay, not a problem. So I figured I could do it right there. No, you can't do it right there. You got to take it back and redo the postage. So I figured, okay, I'd come back to the office and create more postage on my little postage meter thing that's attached to the computer. So I went in with two crates, and I told my wife to, you know, just watch me and pick me up, and then, because I shouldn't be carrying anything. So now I'm lugging three crates out. And she's like, what happened? What's going on? And I was in there for 30 minutes, probably. And I said, I made a mistake on the postage. So the guy was kind enough to not put these through and have it postage due or returned. It's okay. And she said, you know, all right. So came back to the office, and we attempted to create the postage that was the difference in postage. Couldn't do it because I don't have that kind of account. So I started to go through and get that account, and it got all messed up. So I said, nah, never mind. I'll just take these back to the post office and have them run off the extra postage. There's a moral to this story. Okay, so just, hey, you know, bear with me. So my wife takes me back to the post office, and I carry in three. And then she actually carried in one of them, and I carried two, and she's towing the other one behind. We wait in line again. And the same thing, you know. The two guys at the counter wanting stamps. But not wanting stamps, but wanting to look at the kinds of stamps they could pick out. Now, I never really understood that. But anyway. So I went back, and the same guy was there. It was only one person working. We had another, you know, same line behind us. Now, I've got three big crates of books, basically, envelopes, and a whole lot of people behind me. I could feel the eyes, like, darting in the back of my head and thinking, oh, man, you know, I'm going to have a riot behind me. And I said, what can I do? You know, you told me I was 76 cents short. I couldn't print out on a meter. So what's the easiest way? Because, you know, I'm very aware of the line behind me. I don't want to, you know, hang anyone up. He said, well, we don't have 76 cent stamps. And I said, oh, okay. I didn't figure you did. Can you just print me out, you know, a whole bunch of 76 cent postage sticker things? Can't do it. Oh, man. Okay. So now what? Do I, you know, rip off the old postage and save it, or what do I do? He said, no, here's what we need to do. We need to find out the right combination of stamps and that adds up to 76 cents, and then you need to buy those. How hard can that be? Really? Now, keep in mind, these are the people, the federal employees are the people who run the healthcare system. Okay. Yeah, I know it's not the post office, but they run the same. Think about that. So it took me a good 10 minutes, took him a good 10 minutes, a calculator and another person to figure out how many different kinds of stamps, because apparently they've got, like, you know, 40 or 60. They have 68 cent stamps. Why? I don't know, but they do. And 5 cent and 3 cent stamps. So I ended up having to get, after all this was said and done, he finally brings out a whole bunch of 68 cent stamps and 5 cent stamps and 3 cent stamps. Which, of course, the three come to 76 cents. So, I, you know, by this time now, the people behind me are about ready to, I mean, they're fashioning ropes, you know, nooses. Okay, I hear the racking of chambers. I'm hearing grumbling, but it's okay for people to, you know, stand there for 5 minutes and look through the stamps. Through no fault of mine. So anyway, by the time he gave me the 76 cents worth of stamps and these in different what do you call them, denominations, I guess. Finally, my wife and I went over to the table there and proceeded for the next hour to stamp these envelopes. And it was about 45 minutes into this whole process when my wife said to me, you know, somebody's going to take a look at one of these envelopes and they're going to think there's a hidden message because there was a butterfly, a teapot, a coffee pot or something. It was just some strange random thing on the stamps. All that to say this, the books are out. If you get an envelope that has regular postage and then three stamps, and you look at it and you think, what's that? That's the story behind it. There's no secret coded message or anything like that. It was just one of those things. And my apologies for the people that stood behind me in line. But it, you know, hey, it was a pretty major production to come up with a 76 cent total. In the different denomination stamps. But think about that. Here we have, and I did call the guy Newman, postal employee Newman, at one point. I think maybe that might have been an issue. I don't know how many people are familiar with Seinfeld, that sitcom, but that did come out of my mouth. And so at any rate.
Yeah, probably not the brightest.
No, but I guess all that to say this. If you, I've got like, now I know. Now I know how exactly how much it is supposed to be, and how, and I know all that now. So, number one, those who've ordered will get their books. Number two, if I've got, I think, like I said, 25, 30, I don't exactly know how much, how many in the box. If you want one, go ahead to standbypod.com and order. And thirdly, don't forget, the federal government, they're here to help. Yeah. So all of that, and speaking of the federal government, the issue that we're going to get into today is the federal elections and how we're seeing everything being deconstructed around us and imploded upon us. By the way, give me a break, guys, too. It was our 25th wedding anniversary this weekend, or this last week, and I forgot. Is that okay to admit that? Initially, I mean, the day of, I forgot, so my wife and I celebrated this weekend. But she forgot, too. And I said that's because we're both comfortable. Ladies, is that comfortable love? Is that going to help us out? I mean, is that a good... I think she bought it. We're comfortable in love, so we really don't, you know, dates aren't that important to us. Is that okay? What do you think? All right. Ladies, if you think that was a bad thing. But again, she forgot it too, so. All right. I know. You probably didn't need to hear all that, but thank you for, again, thank you for your patience and understanding. But I thought it was kind of funny. I guess you really had to be there more than me relating that story to you. And you know, it's just, when you look at the operation of the federal government, you have to ask yourself how much of it is incompetence versus how much is being done deliberately. And I think that at many levels we ascribe conspiracy to incompetence, but on the larger scale of things, we ascribe incompetence in place of conspiracy on the bigger things. I think at the lower levels, I think you've got a lot of incompetence, and that's done by design. But I think at the higher levels, it's not incompetence; it's deliberate. That's just my thinking. All right,
yeah.
Portions of the Night's Broadcast brought to you by American Survival Wholesale. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Have you gone to their website lately? Their website's down, possibly down. All right, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. By the way, they formulate packs they do free phone consultations. If you've got special dietary needs, whether it be gluten-free, you're on a gluten-restricted diet, or whatever the case might be, you can certainly pick up the phone, contact American Survival Wholesale directly, and they will work with you to create a package for you. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Do get prepared. All right. Let's get into this. How many people are upset about what's going on and what happened in Colorado? How many people know and how many people believe that Trump, by a show of hands, how many people believe that Trump got robbed?
Well, there are some other voices talking about what happened. Now, Colorado did not have a public vote, a vote of the Republicans or any type of caucus or primary vote in their state. They have just decided that Ted Cruz won the delegates. And this is not, or it is news, it's very newsworthy, but I guess we really missed something along the way. Because as my father has pointed out to me, and we talked before the show, they have been planning on doing this for a while now.
Right. Well, all right. Let's go back, and I'm not sure how many people have heard this. George Washington, and this is historically, this is something that I think people really need to understand. When we talk about political parties, we have to understand that we did not have the political structure at the time of our founding that we do today. George Washington warned us about political parties. He warned future generations of exactly what is happening right now and has been happening for some time. And I've got a couple of excerpts from George Washington's farewell address in 1796 about the dangers of political parties. Let's start here. So again, some excerpts from his farewell address. George Washington, he stated this: all obstructions to the execution of the laws, all combinations and associations under whatever plausible character, with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constituted authorities, are destructive of this fundamental principle and of fatal tendency. Meaning, you get a couple of groups together, it's against the greater good. In these groups, he stated this, they serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation and the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community. And according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction. In other words, division. That's my statement in there. Rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. In other words, political parties, in the warning of George Washington in 1796, are divisive. However, combinations, he stated, or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, meaning that, hey, one might adhere to one mindset over another, they are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government. That's what he said. And in continuing, destroying afterwards the very engines which had lifted them to unjust dominion. In other words, somebody raises you up, the people, the will of the people, this particular party, and especially the interests of that party, well, they will have unjust dominion over that person, that candidate. He also stated this, I have already intimated to you the dangers of parties in the state, with particular reference to the founding of them on geographical discriminations. Let me now take a more comprehensive view and warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the spirit of party generally. And he goes on to say, the spirit is inseparable from our nature, having its root in the strongest passions of the human mind. It exists under different shapes in all governments, more or less stifled, controlled, or repressed, but in those of the popular form, it is seen in its greatest rankness and is truly their worst enemy. What he's saying here is with political parties and partisanship comes mischief and comes the influx, the service of those parties to not just distract from the public good, but also to be hijacked. And that's exactly what's happened today. These, at least on the Republican side, the Republican Party has been hijacked. He also writes that, or stated this, it opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another. All right? And he goes on, but you get the idea. The idea here is George Washington had warned about exactly what we're seeing. And you can search this yourself. You can look and search his farewell address of 1796. And with that, the dangers of political parties. And one might think, well, wait a minute, it hasn't always been this way. Well, to an extent, but not to this extent. Another thing, too, very quickly, we are not a democracy. And I cringe every time we hear the word democracy.
We're a representative republic.
We're a represented republic. Right. And so that is the constitutional structure of our elections. End of story. All right. Now, having said all of that, what happened in Colorado? Did we see this coming? Yes. Yes, we did see this coming, and we should have seen this coming. All right. But is it right? Well, a lot of times what's legal is not ethical, and a lot of times what's, you know, what someone can do, they shouldn't do. A lot of times we are prisoners of perception, are we not? If how many times have you looked at something, a situation, and believed it to be one way, and would have reacted, if you did react, perhaps you reacted one way, but upon just stepping back, instead of reacting, you respond after you have the facts. That's what we have here. Now, I'm not excusing in any way, shape, or form what Colorado did. We will explain it, but I'm not excusing it, and I certainly don't agree with it. But there was plenty of warning for this. The architects of this are the GOP establishment, which I mean to say, the architects are of what happened in Colorado are the globalists. And I firmly believe more today than ever before that at the end of the day, we are not going to have a Trump ticket. We're probably not going to have a Cruz ticket. We might have a Bush ticket.
Or a Paul Ryan ticket.
Or a Paul Ryan ticket.
Donald Trump today accused Colorado, saying the people of Colorado had their vote taken away from them by the phony politicians. Big story in politics. Hope this will not be allowed. And then, Eric, I don't know if you got that screenshot from the front of Drudge. There's a tweet from the Colorado GOP.
Which they hurriedly denied that they sent it. They said, oh, we didn't send this.
From the 9th of April, yep, at 8:07 p.m. from the Colorado GOP, they say, we did it. Hashtag never Trump. Folks, you can go to the front
yeah,
of
right.
Drudge.
But see, they said, oh, no, it wasn't us. That somebody had to hack into our feed. We did not do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's just a coincidence that the same day that the Colorado delegates were all given to Ted Cruz, that tweet happens to make its way out in the public arena.
Well, okay, very quickly, just so everyone understands really what this is all about in the larger sense, let's take a step back and look at the Republican, the GOP, and the Republican National Convention, which will take place, which is scheduled to take place July 18th through the 21st, 2016. Okay, what's the structure of this? And what's this all about? Well, there are only two scenarios that can happen, or that do happen at conventions, in Republican conventions in this case. There's only two things that can happen. The presumptive nominee is selected and put on the ticket, or there is an open, contested, or brokered convention, and basically those three words mean the same thing, which means that no single candidate has achieved the necessary number of delegates before the convention. That number is 1,237, which represents 50% of the delegates plus one person for a simple majority. Understand that there are 2,472 delegates. So, half of that plus one is 1,237. The final primaries are June 7th. So, when at the time of the convention, you have all of the 2,472 delegates join the convention in Cleveland, Ohio. They have a roll call or a vote. Now, on the first ballot, 95% are bound. They are obligated to vote for the candidate to whom their support has been allotted by results of the primary or caucus in their state. Let me say that again. 95%, about 95% of the delegates are obligated to vote for the candidate to whom their support has been allotted from the primary or the caucus, whatever it was, in the state.
But that's not saying that they are bound or obligated to vote for the candidate who won the primary. They're saying they're obligated to vote for the candidate to whom their support was allotted
by popular vote or by vote. Or, okay, I'm sorry.
Because look
by
at Louisiana. Louisiana, Trump won the majority of delegates, or won the popular vote, walked away with less delegates than Ted Cruz.
Okay. I understand that, but we're talking, now we're talking at the convention level. We're talking at the federal level. That was at the state primary, or the state level. Now we're talking when all of the delegates get together. It doesn't matter what happened before. Just forget about what happened before. We'll get to that later.
So 95 out of the 100%.
95 out of the 100% must vote for the person to whom their support has been allotted by way of the results of the primary or caucus in their state. Now, there is a rule book that's done with every election. The RNC creates a rule book.
Okay.
The rules committee, a rules committee is established by the party itself, in this case the Republican Party, and for every election a rule book is made and is done by the rules committee, and the rules committee consists of 57 out of the rules committee consists of 112 delegates, one man and one woman from each state. Okay. Plus, from every voting precinct, or every voting geographic area. One man and one woman from each state are elected to the state delegate conventions. And so, they change, or they look at the rules from the last election, from the 2012 election, and they say, okay, which rules are we going to keep? Which rules are we going to change? So just as the rules were shaped around Romney's second bid in 2012, they could be changed to, maybe ensure or assure a Trump nomination or a Cruz nomination. So you've got 57 people, one man and one woman, that comprise, or 112, I'm sorry, 112 that comprise the rules committee, that look at the rules and decide which rules stay, which rules go, which rules are changed, and any new rules that they want to make. This avoids adhering to rules from a previous election that are outdated or inapplicable or whatever. And you can find the rule book, RNC rule book, online. Now, they need, for any changes, they need a majority of the 112, a simple majority, 56 plus 1, or 57 delegates, to make changes. I'm just trying to explain, hopefully everyone's following here. 42 rules govern the Republican Party and how it picks a presidential candidate. All right. With a nomination, it's very possible that we could be looking at, and probable at this point, perhaps, that we could be looking at an open or contested or brokered convention. Delegates can change the procedures to help or hurt any candidate they want.
10 contested conventions?
Right.
So far?
Right. And out of the 10, only 3 times in history, out of the 10 brokered, contested, open conventions on the Republican side, only 3 times has a front runner won.
Yep.
All right. Now, how complicated is this? All right. It seems like it's cumbersome, antiquated, and extremely complicated. Does it reflect the will of the people? In theory, it does, but does it really? Especially when people can change the rules. And herein lies the foundation for what happened in Colorado. Because we just spoke about the federal rules for the RNC and for the Republican Party, the GOP. Now, each individual states before the convention, each individual states get to make up their rules for their primary, their caucus, their whatever it might be. And this is what happened in Colorado this past weekend. So it was last August when officials with the Republican Party in Colorado decided that they would not let voters take part in the early nomination process. This was announced and changed last August. If you read from the Denver Post, August 25th, the GOP Executive Committee voted to cancel the traditional presidential preference poll. This is done now by polling here in Colorado. After the national party changes rules to require a state's delegates to support the candidate that wins the caucus vote. I'm sorry. It's a caucus state. I went ahead of myself there. What this did was take Colorado off the map in the primaries, for the primaries. So, that happened in August. No one said anything. Well, there were some issues. There were some editorials that were a little bit down on the RNC. And there were some people paying attention back last August, September, October. If you look at the writings and look on the, and here's what really, folks, you really need to see. Watch, or you can go back and you can look at the different comments on the Republican, on the like red state and anything Republican or GOP centered. Politically centered, you can see the Karl Rovian machinery at work here. You can see the establishment machine at work here. It's very important to understand. No local caucuses in Colorado could vote delegates for president to the state convention. At the state convention, there were a lot of Trump supporters who wanted to be delegates. So many people wanted to be delegates, and this is important, that they were given numbers, and then delegates were selected by numbers. The problem, many Trump supporters only matched up with, their numbers only matched up with a Cruz supporter, a Cruz delegate. So in other words, that selection process was basically rigged. There are, and you can see on that Twitter feed that you have, and on the front page of Drudge, you can see where one of the delegates for Trump said, "I wasn't allowed in." It wasn't really the fact that he wasn't allowed in. His number wasn't selected, which is not right, because they changed the rules at the state level. In August 25th, the Denver Post reported that the GOP Executive Committee has voted to cancel the traditional presidential preference poll after the National Party changed its rules to require a state's delegates to support the candidate that wins the caucus vote. So this is what happened back late last summer, in February, just before Super Tuesday. The Denver Post published this scathing editorial saying that the party made a tremendous mistake. They wrote this: GOP leaders have never provided a satisfactory reason for foregoing a presidential preference poll, although state party chairman Steve House suggested on the radio at one point that too many Republicans would otherwise flock to their local caucus. In other words, we got too many people. We can't have so many people.
Yeah, and the state Republican Party chairman Steve House said that the party's 24-member executive committee made the unanimous decision, with six members being absent, to skip the preference poll.
That's right. So, to explain this, and we've got more, but you've got to understand the mechanisms by which that the entire system is being rigged.
He goes on to say the move, he says, would give Colorado delegates the freedom to support any candidate eligible at the Cleveland Convention in July. Republican National Committee officials confirmed that the change complies with party rules. Goes on to say, if we do a binding presidential preference poll, We would then pledge our delegates and the candidates we bind them to may not be in the race by the time we get to the convention, House said in an interview. This is from the 25th of April, or I'm sorry, of August last year.
Right.
And it goes on to say the caucus is likely to occur in February, but party officials will meet next month to finalize the date. In 2008 and in 2012, diehard Republican voters gathered at caucus meetings to begin the delegate selection process of selecting delegates to the national convention and voice support for presidential candidates in a straw poll. The votes, however, didn't require Colorado delegates to support any particular candidate at the national convention. This allowed for delegates that supported a losing candidate to vote for the nominee and demonstrate party unity at the convention. But it opened the door for political mischief, they said, as Colorado saw in 2012 when Ron Paul supporters managed to win a significant portion of the state's delegates, even though he finished far behind the other candidates in the caucus. In 2012, the RNC tightened the rules to eliminate non-binding straw polls that help prevent similar stunts in the future. Forcing Colorado Republicans to reevaluate their process. An effort earlier this year to switch to a presidential primary system failed amid party infighting.
And there it is. The infighting delegates can be given bling. I don't know how else. I don't want to... bought off is too hard of a word or too hard of a phrase, but delegates can be wined and dined. That's part of the process. This is, which is why I mentioned George Washington's warning back in 1796, because being a delegate means that you could be, your opinion can be swayed, and instead of following the people who put you in that position, you say, look, I'm a Trump supporter, or I'm a Cruz supporter, or I'm a Smith supporter, whatever it might be. Instead of following their lead, no, you follow the money, the gifts, the swag, the bling, the whatever, however you're lobbied. Now, is that legal? Yes, to an extent. Is that ethical or moral or consistent with our Constitution? No. Of course not. So let's zoom back out here in the remaining few minutes we have at this hour. What about this? What about the Republican National Convention? Just to recap this, 2,472 delegates are to be at the Republican National Convention. Where? Cleveland, Ohio. When? July 18th through the 21st. It is their votes, not yours, but their votes, who decide who will become the GOP's presidential nominee. And everyone's talking about this number, 1,237. That's 50% plus one. They need get going into the convention in order for them to be the presumptive nominee. So the Cruz or Trump or whoever needs to already have in their pocket 1,237 committed delegates in order to win the nomination and not go to a brokered convention or a contested convention. That's how the process works. The final Republican primaries are held on June 7th, well in advance of the convention. So we'll know shortly after June 7th, on or about that date, if the RNC or the GOP is going to have a brokered convention, an open convention, a contested convention. Now, the delegates or the candidates, I'm sorry, would arrive at the convention with the identity of the nominee, in this case, in doubt for the first time, if this does happen since 1976. The last time this happened was 1976 when then incumbent Ford, Gerald R., remember, Bicentennial Minute Gerald Ford, he held off a challenge from Reagan and his supporters. Now, as I mentioned before, Joe, at the first time around, the first ballot, 95% of the delegates will be bound. That means that they're obligated to vote for the candidate to whom their support has been allotted by the primary or caucus in their state. Right. And Trump is virtually assured of winning a strong majority or plurality on the first ballot, but assuming, let's assume for a moment, that he fails to win an outright majority, meaning 1237 or greater, he could be in a much weaker position, yeah, because from there, you take more
they
votes,
say,
subsequent votes.
By estimate, the proportion of total delegates falls from about 95% on the first ballot to 25% on the second ballot.
That's right.
And that process continues. California delegates, for example, are bound for the first two ballots, but then are free to vote as they please. In a winner-take-all state of Florida, its 99 delegates are bound to the primary winner, Trump, for the first three ballots. But will delegates who become unbound always change their minds?
And there it is. And that's good. See, it sounds complicated, but when you really kind of go through this and understand it, you'll understand that it's really not that complicated, except when people throw in and, you know, hey, they lobby delegates or try to buy them off or, you know, whatever.
And before we close this out, I want to mention, you know, Ted Cruz has spent a lot of money to keep his vital records sealed. He himself is not eligible to be the president, yet the media continues to go along with this scheme that he is eligible.
That's right.
And
that's a moral, the moral victory, I guess, right?
Yeah, and there's also a story by Davey Kidd here. Excuse me, on newswithviews.com. Ted Cruz, not on New Jersey ballot, will hearing today finally expose his con game. In December 8th, attorney Leo Donofrio.
We had him on our program, Leo Donofrio. I guess it was 2011, maybe.
Filed a challenge to keep a pair of con men off the ballot for presidential preference, John McCain and Barry Satoro, a.k.a. Obama. Leo was not denied because of standing, not to rehash years of litigation, but Leo ended up petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court, who hid behind their dirty black robes. The High Court refused to hear one of the most important legal issues of our time, presidential eligibility.
That's right.
Shenanigans by clerks at the U.S. Supreme Court should have prompted an investigation by Congress, but of course that never happened. Justice Clarence Thomas disgraced himself when he said during a congressional subcommittee hearing regarding presidential eligibility, we're evading that one. Everybody, including Thomas, laughed. They all laughed. Over 90 lawsuits were brought to stop the criminal imposter in the White House from running for president because Barry Satoro, a.k.a. Obama, known as other aliases, is clearly not a natural-born citizen, despite the massive amount of legal research based on court cases and historical documents defining natural-born citizens. Buffoons in the media, print and electronic, as well as boob tube experts, talk show biggies, and the corrupt machines called RNC and DNC, which are non-governmental organizations and are not bound, or Congress doesn't write their rules for them, nor either does the Constitution, I might add. And those are my words, not hers. But it says they continue to distort the truth by declaring only one parent must be a U.S. citizen. Wrong. Both parents must be U.S. citizens at the time the child is born. Now, it goes on to say, there are several lawsuits requesting for hearings to stop Ted Cruz that have already been thrown out on technical grounds or simply because not going to deal with this syndrome by lower judges or election officials.
That's right.
And it continues.
See, and somebody had mistaken somebody sent me an email saying, why are you giving Cruz a pass on eligibility? I'm not. I am saying to that emailer, this was a week or two ago, to that emailer and to every one of the listeners out there, eligibility, I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, I don't care if you're conservative or liberal, if you are not eligible by the Constitution of the United States, as Cruz is not, then you should not even be considered. You should be off the ticket. But see, we as a people we were told, Joe, so many times, everyone, all of the people said, oh, don't deal with this. That's a distraction. Matters of substance and not eligibility. That's an argument that no one can win. Well, no one can win because no one tried. No one wanted to hear this because of standing or because of some obscure technicality. But the bottom line, Obama was not eligible. Cruz, according to the Constitution, is not eligible. And neither is Rubio, for that matter.
No.
So,
And we're going to cover this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Monday edition. We're talking about the non-Colorado vote, the 2016 Colorado caucus, the swindle, giving Ted Cruz all the delegates.
Let's see all the ties together, buddy.
We'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.